Hello, this is Seth Juarez from Channel 9 coming to you live from the Conference Center here in Seattle. And we just finished the keynote to build. I'm here with, obviously, Scott Guthrie. We have tons of different stuff that we're going to talk about, but this is all about you. We have some questions. We want you to get them in. We want you to ask Scott any questions. So this is like an AMA for him, for those of you that couldn't attend, and so this is all for you. How are you doing, Scott?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Fantastic. So what do you think of the keynote? What are some of the salient points that you want to drive through to the audience? What should developers really be looking at today?
Well, yeah, I think we had a, hopefully, it seems like, from based on Twitter, a really successful keynote, with just a huge number of announcements that we came out with. And, you know, the things I tried to really show in the keynote were, you know, a bunch of the cool tech capabilities, obviously, things like containers and the work we're doing there, serverless computing and Azure Functions and what we're doing there. We made a bunch of great data announcements with both the announcement of a new Postgres as a service, MySQL as a service for Azure, as well as the launch of our new Azure Cosmos DB, which is a really the first global, truly multi-model, multi-API scalable data service that runs all over the world. We showed off Azure Stack. We talked about a lot of the great work that we're doing for SaaS developers and SaaS ISVs around business model. And then just a ton of great developer productivity improvements. You know, the new Bash shell that's integrated with the Azure portal, the new Azure mobile app that now allows you to manage your Azure resources on your iPhone.
From Chili's, apparently.
Or, or you're an Android device. You know, new snapshot debugging with Visual Studio, and then the general availability release of Visual Studio for Mac. So, you know, lots more. That was just a subset of them, but huge number of announcements. And, you know, the thing that, you know, we try to do also is just sort of show off both amazing customers that are using this stuff today, and I think we had 8 or 9 or 12 different customers in the keynote talking about how they're using Azure today and the success they've seen, but also just, you know, really how this end-to-end experience we're trying to put together across Azure, the development tools, and the management tools, you know, really provides, we think, a differentiated experience that really guides your success.
So for someone that's out there, I've been doing .NET since like the beginning of time, right? Which was 2003-ish, right? When the world started with .NET. Like for those that are moving forward, like what is the promise of the cloud for them? Like, and what are the tools, how can the tools help them move forward to be in this new era of the cloud?
You know, I think the biggest thing that the cloud gives you is the ability to be much more agile and release things faster. And at the same time also enable you to use and incorporate new technologies into your solutions. You know, I think, you know, most of us have worked on things where, you know, I have to deploy with, say, an older release of Windows Server or an older release of SQL, or you come to a keynote and you see a shiny new release of something and you go, it's going to take us 3 years before we're going to be able to use that in our existing on-prem environment. And, you know, the beauty about the cloud is, you know, you get to choose the pace at which you move. And if you still want to use Windows Server 2003, you can in Azure. But you can also start to kind of modernize your app where you can use the right technology for the right job, keep as up to date as you want. And you know, I think that for a developer ends up being really liberating and really fun and you know, lets you ultimately have an even more rewarding job.
So the questions are coming in. Obviously, we want your questions, so please have them come in. The first one is Cosmos DB just a rename thing of Document DB, or is there more?
Well, yeah, one of the things we announced today was our new Cosmos DB service. And I think of Cosmos DB as sort of an evolution of DocDB. So it has all the same capabilities that were included in DocDB, but a whole bunch more. And in particular, today we released new graph database support with Cosmos DB. And so you can now basically store, you know, nodes and edges inside
and
Cosmos
query
DB.
As well?
Full query support with a Gremlin-based API. Cool. And so, you know, internally we have systems now that store over 1 trillion objects in a graph structure in Cosmos DB. You know, and that's all new released today. Similarly, we also announced that we're adding to Cosmos DB, and we're shipping it today in preview form, Azure Table Storage support. And so for a lot of our customers that are using the Azure Table Storage system today, you know, people have asked us for many, many years, when am I going to get secondary indexes on tables? You got it today.
Nice.
And the benefit is you can now take all your existing Azure storage that's in tables and now run it in Cosmos DB, not change a single line of code, get blazingly fast performance, get indexes, get all the geo distribution capabilities that Azure Cosmos DB provides, all using the API of your choice. So lots of new capabilities that we're releasing today that are unique to Cosmos DB that's never been, but we're taking care of our existing customers. And so if you're an existing DocDB customer, you know, when you log into the portal today, it now says Azure Cosmos DB. Your API still exists, but now you just have a lot more. And for going forward, we'll also start migrating our table storage customers into Cosmos DB. We're not doing that yet. We have the API today. But similarly, we're going to be able to upgrade you in place to take advantage of those additional capabilities as well. So it should be a pure superset for everyone that's using Azure today.
And my understanding was that, and correct me if I'm wrong, I might have heard this wrong, but let's just say you're using Mongo currently, you can still use the same kind of queries you do from Mongo into Cosmos DB, is that right?
Yeah, the nice thing with Cosmos DB is you can use MongoDB API, you could use the Gremlin API, you could use the Azure Table Storage API, wow. And you can use what was the Document DB API. And you don't change any code. It's the same library. So for MongoDB, we use the same protocol on the wire.
Wow.
So you can choose any MongoDB API for any platform, run it on Linux, run it on Windows, run it in a container, point the connection string at Cosmos DB, and it just works.
And that's awesome because, I mean, as a developer, anytime you tell me I want to move to the next thing, I'm like, ooh. Yep. So you're saying the API stays the same, you have your same application running, it'll go straight to, you say you have a Ruby on Rails going to Mongo, same thing.
Just works.
Awesome. There's another question about Cosmos DB. It said, and maybe this is a misunderstanding, but they're saying, is Cosmos DB going to be included in SQL Server? Or are those two totally different things?
Well, they're really, today, different things. In the sense of, you know, Cosmos DB is much more, you know, does provide a SQL API, but it's really optimized for distributed databases.
Right.
Where the data can run in multiple regions around the world, where you get different levels of consistency. You can do, you know, so you could do SQL with a strong API with Cosmos DB, but the beauty about Cosmos DB is it also lets you do an eventual consistency,
right,
and three extra level of consistencies in between. Mm-hmm. And the benefit with that consistency model is, you know, take a classic, say, e-commerce site. You know, for your shopping cart your page content of the items, you know, eventual consistency is really what you want. Because you don't need to have kind of atomic transactions across 26 different regions around the world whenever you update the content or the image of your site. You just want to make sure it flows cleanly. And you could use Cosmos DB for those types of scenarios. If you've got a shopping cart, you might want the shopping cart to have what's called session consistency, which means that every time a particular user adds something in or out of the shopping cart, they see a consistent view regardless of what region they're using around the world.
Right.
And we guarantee that consistency level. And then for something like, you know, payments, you might want to do strong consistency to ensure, you know, that as soon as you write a payment transaction, it's simultaneously updated everywhere. And that's what Cosmos DB gives you, is that flexibility of consistency with that global scale. There's still scenarios where you want to use a relational database in and you know, have a very tight atomic transactional relational model. And that's where SQL Server obviously continues to shine.
And you can, and as an application developer, you can literally make Cosmos do the good things that it does, and then have Azure SQL Server do the other things that it does well as well in the same application.
Oh, totally. And you know, I think for most cloud applications that are at scale, they typically today use multiple different data sources because you know, different scenarios you sometimes want to use different things. And you know, the beauty about what Cosmos DB is giving you, though, is a wide variety of NoSQL capabilities in one service. And so you don't have to have like five different NoSQL services. You can have one Cosmos DB service and get key value. You could document as well as get graph-based data.
Right.
And so you can have one there, but you know, we still expect a lot of developers will want to have a relational model for other scenarios. And obviously with SQL DB, as well as our Postgres and MySQL as a service now, you know, we give you a full suite of options there as well.
And that's awesome, right? Because with the cloud, now your app can be distributed in whatever way you choose.
Yep.
So the other question is about the SLA. There's an interesting SLA around Cosmos DB. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, the thing that we did with Cosmos DB that is pretty compelling is We now provide four SLAs. So we provide an SLA around availability, meaning is the service up and can you access it and use it? Most cloud services do that. Where we're differentiated is we also then provide availabilities around the consistency level, like how fast is your data replicated across different regions.
Sure.
And then in particular, we provide an SLA around read and write latency. So we guarantee single digit millisecond read latency anywhere in the world against your data. And we guarantee throughput, meaning how many transactions per second can you actually go against your system and provide an SLA around that. And that ability to have performance SLAs that are enforced and directly in the admin console, we surface those metrics inside the UI, you know, means that you can really depend on that type of performance as you're building your app. And that's something no other database service out there does today.
And this is all good stuff, but for those that are watching, we are going to have a session just for Cosmos DB starting at 6:30 Pacific time. Cool. With John Papa, who's going to be at, because he works great. a lot of that stuff. So let's move on to some of the other stuff.
And actually, one thing I'd say is for all the services we announced today, if you go to azure.com and then click on the documentation tab, we have a really nice getting started page now. And there's links for Cosmos DB, there's links for, you know, Postgres, MySQL, Azure Functions, Web Apps, the new CLI, PowerShell, and a whole bunch more. And so if you want to try out Cosmos DB, it's the best place to go. Go to Azure, click on the documentation tab, and we got some really nice getting started in .NET, Java, Node.js, Python, and one more that you can use with your API of choice to get going.
That's awesome. Okay, so we're going to move on now to sort of containers and microservices. A question, did the Docker announcement mean that we can now deploy Docker images natively into app services?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, you can basically now with Azure App Service, it's still in preview, but it'll go GA very soon, but it's a public preview, so you can take advantage of it now. When you deploy and create a Azure App Service, you can now select both Windows and Linux as the app service container host. And when you select Linux, one of the options when you create an app is to basically supply a Docker image. Mm-hmm. And that'll run a native Docker image. And we have built-in images for Python, Ruby, Node, .NET Core, Java, and all the others. But you can supply your own custom Docker image. Use our CI/CD pipeline with either GitHub or VSTS, as well as use the Azure Container Registry to basically deploy your Docker images in and basically enable a really sweet Docker workflow with any Azure app service.
And that's awesome, right? Because like for me, containerization is a difficult thing. I mean, distributed systems are distributed systems. Is Docker the only sort of offering that we have, or is there a Microsoft container thing, or is there, what kind of services do we provide around those kind of distributed systems on Azure?
Well, I think one of the things that we wanted to do and ship this week is basically how can we embrace Docker as and you know as sort of the meta language, if you will, for describing containers. And so, you know, you can use containers without Docker, and we support that. But we've tried to, instead of invent our own declarative mechanism to declare and represent containers, is just natively use the Dockerfile format, natively use Docker Compose inside Visual Studio and our tooling.
Right.
And so if you take, you can now take any .NET app, not just a .NET Core app, but actually a full .NET Framework app written, you know, with even an older version of the .NET Framework. It doesn't even have to be the modern version of the .NET Framework. And now with VS 2017, you can right-click and say add Docker support, and we'll take that .NET project, add a Docker file to it, add a Docker Compose file at your solution level, and now we're describing your app in terms of Docker.
That's awesome.
And when you hit F5, we'll run that app in the context of Docker. And what we showed in the keynote today was just that, basically. And what was cool, though, is it was a full .NET Framework app, and so the container we created when you added Docker support for it was a Windows-based container. And it had IIS in it, it had WCF in it, it had, you know, the full Windows that you've already been programming your .NET apps against, but it's now containerized, described in a Docker file, and you can now deploy that to Azure. And the thing that we shipped today also that we're pretty excited about is native Docker and Docker Compose support with Service Fabric. And that means you can now stand up a container cluster inside Azure using Service Fabric and wire up CI/CD and deploy these Docker Compose-based Windows apps into them.
Wow.
And in the demo we showed today, we had a five nodes, or I think it was like a five VM cluster that was running, I think, 119 apps inside of it. So we got massive density benefits. So it dramatically saves cost versus having a separate VM
sure.
for every app. And it's all being described using an open source Docker mechanism. But I didn't have to change any code. I'm still using Linux or Windows-based containers. And then if I want to, I can also then start to add .NET Core or Java or Scala or Ruby or Node or Python.
As separate containers
right. running on the same cluster. And I can have a microservice-based architecture where I can use any tech stack I want, Windows or Linux, using Visual Studio, using the full support of Azure. And you know, that's a pretty exciting opportunity for any developer.
That is amazing.
Unlimited opportunity.
And I think this segues into, Ahmed has a really good question. What is the vision on microservice architecture support in Azure, mainly event sourcing, core microservice architecture support? Like, this leads us to a question of, now that we can do these things, how should we do them?
Yeah. And that's where we've tried with Service Fabric to really provide not just the core orchestration capabilities, which is what we demoed in the keynote, right? Just containerize something and deploy it. But you know, the vision I have is once you do that, you can then right-click and if you optionally add the Service Fabric library to any of the microservices where you want to take advantage of some of these higher-level primitives, you know, distributed dictionaries, quorum and leader election for state management and for nodes inside your application, you know, data partitioning, where you basically are co-locating your code and your data at scale. You know, the beauty is you can optionally do that inside the microservices built with Service Fabric, but you don't have to. And so if you just want to have a vanilla Docker image that would run on any container host, you can do that now with Service Fabric.
Right.
But if you want to opt into some of those more advanced scenarios, we give you a sweet way to do it.
That's awesome. So Ram says, Azure Container Service seems to take the provisioning complexities out of the customers. When will the service be truly managed where customers don't have to worry about patching and software upgrades on the cluster? Is that something that we support already?
Yeah, so one of the things that we do is both our Service Fabric offering as well as our Azure Container Service or ACS offering are built on this common mechanism we call Azure VM Scale Sets. And that basically allows us to reuse a lot of the infrastructure hosting at the base. And what we're doing, and I think we're even talking about in some of the talks here at Build this week, is adding into VM scale sets a lot of those self-managed capabilities, like automatic OS patching, automatic updates, and so forth. And so you'll see that all appear very soon. And I think we might even be either talking about it or previewing it this week in some of the talks here at Build. And you know that will in turn make everything above that, including both ACS and Service Fabric, be fully managed from a cluster perspective.
That's awesome. So I mean, let's move on now to some of the .NET stuff that's going on. Tell us about the vision for .NET inside of Azure.
Well, I mean, I think it's an exciting time in .NET right now. Yeah, it's hard for me to kind of believe, you know, the PDC, which was a developer show we had before Build, it was 17 years ago that we actually launched .NET. It was PDC 2000
in
Orlando.
Oh, my goodness.
And, you know, the thing that's kind of amazing to me is, and I've been working on this December, I think, will be the 20th anniversary that I've been working on ASP.NET.
Wow.
There's not much tech out there that 20 years later is modern and looks good.
And that people are still using.
And still using.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing that's kind of, I think, cool about .NET is, you know, there's an energy about it right now with the stuff that we've done with .NET Core and around ASP.NET Core, where, you know, even though it's evolved quite a bit from 20 years ago, or 17 years ago when we first shipped the preview, public preview, it's got, you know, a lot of that same code just works. In fact, I think pretty much all that same code still works.
Right.
But, you know, we've been able to, with the .NET Core release, really adopt .NET to be much more microservice ready. So it's, you know, much thinner, much faster startup time. It, you know, has a really streamlined API service. It's great for building web APIs. It's got low memory working set. And yet, you know, it's the same language and the same libraries that you love. And, you know, we're now seeing .NET usage and developer adoption grow again in a big way. and grow not just on Windows, but grow on Linux, grow on Mac. We just shipped VS for Mac, so now there's a full IDE that every Visual Studio customer gets as part of their Visual Studio license so that they can do their .NET development now both on Windows and Mac. And, you know, with Xamarin, you know, we now have with iOS and Android full support. And in Terry's keynote tomorrow, you know, he's going to be talking about how you can now do multi-device based development, you know, across Windows and with Xamarin across iOS and Android. And, you know, I think it's an exciting time for .NET, and you're going to see us, you know, continue to build some great stuff with it.
Let's move on now to this thing called serverless, because for us it's not serverless, but for the users it is serverless.
Yep.
Why don't you describe what that is, and then how someone could use serverless, leverage serverless to build really good applications?
Yeah, so the I think there's a couple benefits with a serverless-based paradigm, and you know, one is it helps guide you to build more of an event or stream-based architecture, which meaning instead of having code just running and sitting in a loop or pulling things explicitly, you're sort of designing a model where in response to a trigger, you execute some code. And that is sort of a benefit in that it helps you design your code to just be inherently more scalable because you know, you don't have these sort of loops or lock contention, if you will, inside your architecture. So it's a good design pattern, regardless of whether it's serverless or not, that you benefit from. And then where serverless really comes into play is the fact that you don't actually have to pay for resources or VM cycles that you aren't using.
Right.
And so with our serverless capability in Azure, we give you a model where you can actually just pay literally by the clock cycle effectively for when the code's running. And that way, if you don't max out your VM close to 100%, it's cheaper to run it in a serverless-based option. It makes it very cost-effective for lots of scenarios. We have some customers, for example, in the manufacturing space, where they now process literally billions of serverless events per day. And their total bill that they pay us is like $4 a day. Because it's
maybe we should go back and rework that or something.
Yeah,
you know?
They love it. My CFO might not love it, but it's it's great for them because they can now do so much more and save money doing it. And you know, with Azure, we now have a fantastic way to do that. And so with our Azure Function Service, we let you write serverless code. We shipped a whole bunch of updates today around our Visual Studio tooling for that, so you can actually not just code, but you can also debug. You can run and test locally, and then publish to Azure, all in the IDE. And then we also have Logic App support, so you can run serverless workflows.
Right.
And so if you want to, for example, trigger a serverless code in response to, say, a CRM update, in either, say, Salesforce or Dynamics, run some code, pull data from SAP, pull data from a bunch of systems, execute some serverless code and run it, you can do that now as well. And we now have great Visual Studio tooling support for that.
And you know, my wife thought I was a genius because there is a stock page that updates every once in a while so she can buy whatever she wants to buy. I literally made a Logic app to look at that page every 8 minutes, yep. HTML agility pack, read it, it shot off into a function, then did some, and literally like within a couple of hours, I looked like a genius
cool.
with Logic app. So thank you for making my marriage better, Scott. I'm just saying.
Good to hear.
Awesome. So when we're talking about the question is, how do I get the new Azure Functions tool for Visual Studio? When is that going to be available?
It's available today.
Okay.
So if you go and hopefully if you go to the Azure website, we have a download link published, but that tooling is available this week. And so you can start to download and install it with VS 2017 now.
We have about 2 minutes. Can you give me 60 seconds on the promise of Azure Stack? What is that and why should people think about using it?
Well, you know, I think one of the things, I spent, most of my time today in the keynote showing is like all this great Azure innovation. And yet, we also hear from developers that say like, I love this stuff. The problem is I can't use the public cloud just yet.
Right.
You know, I'm developing a system that runs in a disconnected way and can't take a dependency on the internet, or I'm working in a bank or healthcare or in a country that doesn't have an Azure region right now, and for data sovereignty reasons, I'm not allowed to move data outside my jurisdiction. Or I've got a mainframe and I need this app to sit next to the mainframe and we can't move the mainframe yet to public cloud. But gosh, for all those scenarios, I'd love to be able to take advantage of Azure. And the powerfulness of Azure Stack is now you can. And so it gives you the same management API, the same developer management portal, the same developer services. You can do functions on it.
Wow.
You can do web apps and app servers on it. You can do service fabric and containers on it. And the beauty is you can run it literally anywhere in the world. And that's really the promise of Azure Stack.
I feel like a really good use case is putting it like on a boat in the middle of nowhere. I mean, what do you think?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, one of the customers I had in the keynote
right,
was Carnival Cruise Line.
Yeah.
And they use public cloud Azure today for a bunch of stuff, for a data lake, for IoT, for analytics. But the problem they had was when their ship's out at sea, they don't always have an internet connection. Now they can put Azure Stack on the ship and update their onboard systems as well. And then there was a great video in the keynote of EY, which is one of the largest professional services firms in the world. And they've got countries in the world where you're not allowed to move data out of. And you know, now they're able to have a single code base, run a lot of their professional services in public cloud Azure mm-hmm. for most countries in the world. And then if they need to operate, say, in Russia or South Africa or certain countries where there isn't a public cloud or Azure instance in today, they can now stand up an Azure Stack instance, keep all that data inside those countries,
awesome.
And fulfill all regulatory requirements.
Well, thanks for spending some time with us. We'll have to chat some more, get some more news on Azure. We are out of time, and we're going to go to a session right about now.